Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Hello, Twisted Humans. Do you find yourself wanting to know more about the latest murder, conspiracy, cult, or haunting?
Then this is the podcast for you.
In 1952, there was a record high of UFOs reported. 1,500 sightings.
There has been evidence of human sacrifice, devil worship, and it is haunted by more spirits than can be counted.
A family of two adults and two kids reportedly saw a giant flying thing with glowing red eyes.
And meanwhile, the family's nanny that helped Veronica to care for her and Lucian's children was found bludgeoned to death in the basement of their family home.
I'm Alicia.
And I'm Sierra. And this is
Twisted and Uncorked.
Hey, fellow truth seekers, I'm Justin.
And I'm Brandy, and together we'll be your guides on this spine-tingling journey through the unknown.
We dive headfirst into the eerie realms of cryptids, from Bigfoot to Loch Ness Monster.
And hold on tight, because we'll explore spine-chilling encounters with extraterrestrial beings and UFO sightings that will leave you questioning what's really out there.
Beyond the Shadows is not your average paranormal podcast. Our goal is simple. To shed light on the shadows that haunt our world and confront the unexplained with an open mind.
And for the skeptics, don't worry, we have something for you too. Our conspiracy theories will challenge your beliefs and make you question everything. So, if you're fascinated by the paranormal, yearn for chilling true crime stories, or crave the adrenaline rush of uncovering conspiracies,
join us on this hair-raising adventure as we journey beyond the shadows.
Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes. Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for joining us again for another Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy episode.
Hi, friends. Thanks for joining us.
What story do you have for us today, Mom?
I have the story about Daniel and Crystal Krug. Daniel was not a nice guy. We'll just say that. And he did some bad stuff. And that's why it's our brutal story. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
What story do you have?
I am going to be talking about the Contras versus the Sandinistas.
Okay.
Yes, and it's kind of a two-parter, somewhat. I mean, there's a connection to next week's story for me.
Okay, cool.
Yes, and to go with it, I have El Machuca cocktail.
Machuca. That's such and a weird-sounding word.
It's named after the Central American bird and is the national drink of Nicaragua.
Okay. Oh, okay. Nicaragua. Gotcha.
So to make this, you use 1.5 ounce of white rum, 1 ounce guava juice, 1 ounce orange juice, 1/2 ounce lemon juice, 1/3 ounce simple syrup, and you can garnish with a cherry or an orange slice.
Okay.
This sounds pretty fucking good. I'm excited for it.
I think it does too. I mean, even though it's got rum in it, and I don't like rum.
I think there's enough other shit to hide the flavor, though.
Agreed.
It should be fairly decent, I think.
I think it's going to be
tasty. Give
it
a try.
Here we go.
Yeah, I could drink this on like a vacation.
For sure. This is nice and tropical and... Wasn't quite sure what it would be like with the guava, but the guava is very, it's nice and sweet. It's not too sweet. I thought it would be a little sweeter with the guava in there, but it's perfect. It's a good, I think it definitely needs the simple syrup, but not a lot.
Round it out.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I like that. That's a good drink.
Yeah, it's pretty tasty. I think if just like a little bit of coconut flavoring in there could be really good.
I like how you think.
A painkiller type deal.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be very similar to a painkiller. You could use coconut rum. Maybe that would add it. Or you could add like coconut cream. Either one of them.
Maybe replace like the simple syrup with coconut cream.
Yeah, with like a Coco Lopez.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that idea. That's a good idea. I'm going to have to try that next. Because I got to finish out that can of guava juice. I only used an ounce of it. It was a full can. Might have to make 7 or 8 more drinks. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about the Contras versus the Sandinistas. During the Cold War, concerns of the Communist Revolution filled America with fear with Fidel Castro's rise to power in Cuba. With Cuba being so close to America, the government believed it needed to keep communism as far away as possible. Also, this is kind of just a history lesson, people, but it's an interesting one. So,
yeah.
If you don't like history, just skip over to Mom's part.
Right, and then you can hear about bad things happening to people.
Yes. So, similar to Cuba, Nicaragua was undergoing a similar power struggle when the Sandinista political party overthrew the sitting dictator in 1979. And I say political party because that's technically what it is. It's a lot different than our political parties that we have.
Right.
In other countries, their political parties are terrorists who overthrow the government, basically.
Right. They go, yeah, we're done with you. It's our turn.
Yeah. Kind of like the Taliban. They're technically a government now. So
a political party. Yeah.
Yeah. The Sandinistas were a communist party, and with Nicaragua being in Central America, it put the U.S. in a predicament. After the Nicaraguan Revolution, the country's political parties consist of two main groups, the Sandinistas and the Contras.
Okay.
The Contras opposed the Sandinistas and consisted of National Guardsmen who served under the ex-dictator Somoza and people who initially agreed to the revolution but felt betrayed by the Sandinistas when they got into power.
Okay.
Yes. In 1982, Ronald Reagan signed the National Security Decision Directive, allowing the CIA to support the Contras and provide $19 million, about $60 million today, in military funding.
That's a lot of money.
Yes.
Okay.
Compared to the other money we're sending to people right now, it's not that much.
We're always sending money to somebody else.
Yes. We're the money and rich stuff. Grandmother who puts a couple hundred in your birthday card.
Right?
Like,
neither one of us would know what that's like, but okay.
Yeah, no, but I've seen it in movies.
Yeah, it happens somewhere.
Yeah. So the Contras were funded, trained, equipped, armed, and organized by the CIA in hopes of successfully overthrowing the communist Sandinistas.
Okay.
The Sandinistas were funded and armed by Cuba and the Soviet Union. So it was basically United States versus communism.
Okay. And versus Cuba, because Cuba was... So the CIA, the CIA's training the Contras and Cuba's training the Sandinistas?
Yes, with help from the Soviet Union. So.
Oh, both. Okay.
Since the Contras were trained by and worked so closely with the CIA, they naturally picked up some nasty habits from them.
The CIA doesn't have any nasty habits. Yeah. Come on.
So throughout the revolution, the Contras would commit some war crimes. Got to crack a few eggs to make an anti-communist omelet.
Yes, I do.
The Contras frequently incited violence against civilian leaders, government officials, attacking schools, hospitals, and other essential needs. So they were just... Yeah, now, there's some reports from journalists who went down there at the time, and if you want to be disgusted, you can read those, but...
No, thank you.
Like, there's one journalist who watched the Contras make someone dig his own grave and then stabbed him in the throat and then buried him, so...
Okay.
Yeah. The CIA also got their hands dirty by blowing up essential pipelines, refineries, and ports. So, CIA wasn't just making these guys do everything they wanted to get in action, too.
They got in there and they were like, it's our turn.
Problems, yeah. By 1985, Congress had gotten word of the war crimes that had been committed in Nicaragua by the Contras. And so the Bulling Amendment was passed, preventing any and all aid to Nicaragua from U.S. government agencies. But if we know anything about the CIA, we know that they don't actually stop when they're told to. A secret wing of the National Security Council called Enterprise came into play. This used offshore bank accounts and collected funds, assets, and assistance from third parties and other government agencies, including the CIA. So, CIA was able to funnel this money into the agent or the Enterprise, which essentially was them working in Nicaragua under a different name.
Gotcha.
Contras had another form of income, which was cocaine. CIA was aware of this and used it to their advantage. While it's unknown if the CIA facilitated the sale of the Contras cocaine or simply allowed it to happen, it was clear that they were well aware of it. This is what points me towards their involvement in the sale of cocaine.
Okay.
So reporter Gary Webb, who committed suicide by shooting himself in the head twice, published a series called The Dark Alliance.
Okay. Not shady sounding at all.
No. Yeah, it's totally possible to shoot yourself in the head twice in the bathtub. That's definitely what happened.
Did you say in a hot tub?
In his bathtub.
Oh, bathtub. Okay.
Yeah. There's a whole documentary about it on Netflix called something, I think Octopus or something Octopus. But it talks about Gary Webb and like this weird circumstances of his death.
But yeah, I think I've heard about that doc, like the Octopus Files or something like that.
I think it's something like that.
I heard it was really good. Totally forgot about it until you just said it. I have to go check that out. I think the guys went
on Joe Rogan, like the people that made it, but
probably.
So in this series that Gary published, this told the story of Barry Seal, who also has a movie. And in the movie, he's played by Tom Cruise.
I think it's
called American Made. And I really want to watch it, but you gotta pay for it.
I've seen it. It's okay. It's kind of interesting because you go, did this really happen this way? But
I heard it's not. It's very loosely based on true events. And I don't think it's an exact.
Yeah.
It was a story of his life, but he was a very interesting guy.
Okay.
I might do a story on him too, because he also died in mysterious ways. But
nice.
So Barry was a drug smuggler for the Medellin cartel in Colombia and often earned about $500,000 a flight smuggling cocaine for them.
I'd do it like five times and be done.
Call it a day. So
no, don't Barry be
was
greedy
arrested for this.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. But instead of going to jail, he started working undercover for the DEA.
Yeah.
Many of Barry's flights left from the MENA airport in Arkansas, which, according to witnesses, whistleblowers, and journalists, was owned and operated by the CIA.
Oh,
so
okay.
That would facilitate the cocaine coming into the country on Barry's plane. And then he could pick up arms, grenades, ammunition, whatever he needed to support the Contras, fly back down to Central America, drop it off for him.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. While it was never officially confirmed that the CIA was involved in selling cocaine and led to the crack epidemic in America, all the signs kind of point to it in my book.
Yeah.
And that's just scratching the surface of the whole Sandinistas and Contras, because there was an arms deal with Iran that was also helped funded the Contras through the back door of Enterprise. But if you want to, that'd be a 4-hour podcast if we want to talk about the whole story. I just wanted to make, I'm basically setting up for next week's episode. Kind of giving a little bit of background, because there's some things that they were connected to that led to some deaths. So,
okay. Which is the brutal part, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Cool. So let's. Let's hear about your not so nice people
doing
not so nice things.
So this is a newer story that actually resolved about a month ago.
Oh.
Let's go back a little bit in time. We're going to talk about Daniel Krug, who was born in 1980, and he grew up in Colorado. We've been to Colorado a few times, so we're going to go back.
I haven't. Oh, we're talking about the podcast.
Well,
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. I was like,
have we been? I think you have been to Colorado. You've been to the Denver airport.
Oh, isn't that the one with all the conspiracy theories and stuff?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Purple horse outside. Okay.
Yes. supposedly it's haunted. Supposedly there's
an underground base for
chapter of the Illuminati. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. We were there last year. And
that's a refinery, right? That's what you guys. No, that was Montana.
No. Refinery.
Or the minting. Not refinery. Minting.
Oh, yes. We went to the Denver Mint when we were. Oh,
okay.
There.
So it wasn't Denver.
Yes.
Okay.
But you personally have been to the Denver airport when we remember our trip from hell coming back from New Orleans.
Oh, I couldn't tell you where. I thought
we stopped in Denver.
Oh, after driving in Texas, we went to Denver. Is that what the
We flew from Dallas to Chicago, Chicago to Denver, Denver to San Fran, and then San Fran back home. Over a course of 3 long, horrible days.
Yeah.
That it should have. Ugh.
It kind of made me feel like that Tom Hanks movie where he lives in the airport.
It felt like.
True story, too.
Yeah.
That's another interesting one, but that's what it felt like. Just living in the airport, basically.
It was in multiple airports. That was the bad thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, so let's get back to our story. Daniel Krug pursued a career in public health and eventually landed a position at the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment in Glendale. He was intelligent and outwardly successful. He appeared respectable both professionally and personally. For the most part, his colleagues liked him and described him as capable and reliable. But behind closed doors, of course, he wasn't necessarily the nice guy people saw on the surface. We're going to spin to Crystal, who was born in 1981 in Boulder, Colorado. She was brilliant, driven, and creative. She earned a degree in biochemical engineering, which is
something that
sounds very daunting. I hated biochemistry class. It was not my favorite, but she got her degree in biochemical engineering, so she was smart. She was also a dancer known for her grace and athleticism. Crystal and Daniel Krug met in the early 2000s and they married in 2007. The couple would have three kids together. Crystal was also a devoted mother who was dedicated to raising her children. Crystal's friends and family often talked about her intelligence, warmth, and the devotion to her family. From the outside, their life looked picture perfect, a house in Broomfield, three children, and stable careers. But as often happens, reality was not as it might have appeared, which is why it's our brutal story. Over time, Daniel became increasingly controlling. Friends and family noticed red flags in his behavior. He monitored Crystal's movements, isolated her from others, and criticized her constantly. By 2023, Crystal had made the difficult decision to leave Daniel. She was ready to start over, to create a life where she and her children could thrive without fear. But Krug was not ready to let his family go. He saw Crystal's independence not as a right, but as a threat. So he began stalking her.
She do.
But not in a typical way. Because, yeah, you know, usually if you stalk somebody, they know that you're stalking them. You know, something's kind of shady. Well, they feel threatened.
Also with it being, you said it's a recent story, right?
Yes. 2023 was when it.
Online stalking is very prevalent nowadays, and that's.
Yes.
Is that what you're going to get into?
Well, it was a lot of digital stalking.
Okay.
Yeah, so through his digital stalking, he used emotional manipulation and psychological warfare. In October 2023, Crystal began receiving disturbing emails and text messages from someone claiming to be an ex-boyfriend that she hadn't seen in over 20 years. So she's getting these random messages, not thinking they're from Daniel, but thinking they're from somebody else. Spoiler alert, I just told you they were from Daniel. But, you know, claiming to be someone else. The messages were graphic, threatening, and very unsettling. Some included photographs that made it clear she was being watched. So
that's scary.
It is scary.
It's,
and
like,
I mean, it's
getting pictures while she's sitting on the couch watching TV just from outside the window.
Probably.
Like,
yeah. And the husband, Krug, is interviewed by the police, and I guess he's crying about how he feels bad that he's not protecting his family and protecting his wife and all this stuff. And he's, you know, oh my gosh, I'm so shocked that who would be threatening her and stalking her? That's so scary. And I just feel bad that I can't protect her.
Okay.
Yet others threatened, some of the other messages threatened Daniel Krug's safety, suggesting that this mysterious ex-boyfriend was targeting not only her, but her family as well.
This sounds kind of like that MI6 story.
Kind of. Yeah.
Like, he's implicating himself to try and not.
Right.
Like, seem innocent. To seem innocent.
Yes.
So.
Yes. I'm the innocent one.
They're attacking me too.
They're coming after me. Crystal was terrified by the stalking, as anyone would be. So she went to the police. She filed multiple reports with Broomfield Police Department. At the time, everyone, including Crystal, believed the harassment was coming from this long-lost ex-boyfriend. No one suspected that Daniel Krug was behind all of it. But unfortunately, he was. Krug had created multiple fake email addresses. And he had purchased burner phones and used them to send the messages, all while pretending that it was coming from Crystal's former boyfriend and that he was a target of the attacks as well, that he wasn't the one doing all of the attacking. He carefully crafted these digital attacks, orchestrating them to break her down mentally and emotionally. He wanted to create chaos, to destabilize her life and reassert his control. In the meantime, he continued presenting himself as the concerned husband, the father of their children, and the one that was trying to help her through this bizarre and terrifying situation. Yeah, what a dick. And all of this led Crystal and the police to believe he, you know, cared so much for his wife and his family. So in December of 2023, he stepped it up a notch because, you know, terrorizing someone isn't good enough. That morning, Crystal dropped off her children at school and returned home to get ready for work. As she stepped into the garage, Krug ambushed her. He struck her in the head several times and stabbed her in the chest, piercing her heart.
Jesus.
Yeah. The violence was brutal and calculated. After killing Crystal, Daniel tried to cover his tracks, which, you know, I mean, if you're going to kill somebody, you got to do some shady shit to.
Yeah.
Right. He used her phone to send a message to her work, making it seem that she wouldn't be coming in. He also sent a text to a friend referencing infidelity and suggesting that Crystal had left him. These messages were meant to delay the discovery of her body. He wanted to paint a false picture of what had happened. He also disabled the home security system and covered the doorbell camera with blue masking tape. Then he went to work.
Coming up to the camera. This is a thing that
right?
gets me with.
Like,
covering cameras and stuff. Like, you have to walk up to it and put the tape on there.
I wonder if there's like a video of him covering the camera, or if he was like up against the wall trying to stay out of the camera's view, and then he like snuck his hand over with the tape and covered it. I don't know. I didn't look, but I think that would be pretty funny to see.
Just a little side note, I saw this video that was just like that. It was a kid trying to sneak out of his house, and he knew he had a Ring doorbell, and it's like, you see him open the door and then duck. He thought he was ducking under the camera, but it just showed him his entire body just
duck
under the camera and keep walking out of the yard. It's like, that's awesome. Nice try. The effort was
a wider angle than you think, bro.
Yeah. A for effort.
Yeah. So after Daniel tried to cover his tracks, he went to work, but he arrived later than usual. Around noon, he called the police and asked them to conduct a welfare check on Crystal. Officers arrived at the house and found her unconscious in the garage. She was pronounced dead shortly after that. So it sounds like she might have still been alive, but hanging on.
Her in the head or something?
I don't know. He hit her over the head and he stabbed her in the heart. I don't know how severe the stabbing was, but
how much later was it? Because he had time to leave.
A couple hours.
Then
several hours.
Must not have been a good stabbing in the heart.
Maybe.
It seems like a quick death, but
yeah, might not have been. So of course the police dove into the case and started a thorough investigation. From the beginning, investigators found inconsistencies in Daniel's story. I mean, if you're gonna kill somebody, come up with a story and stick to your story.
Yeah, write it down, memorize it, and then keep to that story. That's not,
plan that shit hard. Ahead of time. Not that we're telling anybody to commit a murder, but I mean, have a plan and stick to your plan.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I was asleep all night. I worked a double shift and I had to take a nap.
Something. I don't know. Work on your alibi for a while.
Yeah.
Surveillance footage showed that he had left the house later than usual that morning. The doorbell camera, though covered, had gaps in its recording that raised suspicions. So I guess he tampered with the recording itself.
And went in the Ring camera app and deleted the footage.
Yeah, I guess. Most damning of all, digital forensics linked the threatening emails and text messages back to him. So
yeah.
There's
to,
a
like,
footprint.
Go to the public library, use their internet.
Yeah.
not trying to teach anyone how to do a murder, but no. If you're going to use emails and text, don't do it from your home IP address.
Right. Come on. Okay. I could see if you didn't know that that shit was being tracked in like 2010, but this was 2 years ago. Everybody knows about IP addresses. Everybody knows that your computer has a unique signature.
So if you didn't know this, I found this out recently. Oh. Printers, you know how like if you're just printing in black and white, it's like, oh, you're out of yellow ink. You can't print without yellow ink.
Yeah.
That's each printer has a unique signature that prints dots in a specific pattern in yellow ink that you can't see on white paper. So that the FBI can track and be like, oh, this is linked to this exact make, model, and number of printer.
See, I would have assumed that.
You got to do the old school, like, the cheesy thing where you cut out letters from a magazine. Deliver the ransom to this address.
And then make sure that it's, like, multiple magazines so that, multiple magazines that are not...
from different places. Just steal them from like dental offices. Yeah.
Right. You shouldn't have your own subscription. Oh, it came from this magazine and that magazine. Oh, and that person has that magazine subscription. Both of them. What are the odds? No. Come on, people. Just assume that everything is trackable.
It is. Everything is 100%.
Everything. And then don't go kill anyone.
Yeah,
that should bottom be line.
Don't kill anyone, but just, assume you're being tracked if you are.
For sure. So his work computer had been used to access the fake accounts. That was another tick against him. Cell phone records showed that the burner phones had traveled with him. So he gets these burner phones thinking that he can use them and it can't be tracked to him. But then he carries the burner phones everywhere with him.
That's pretty dumb.
So location, yeah. He had meticulously planned every step of the harassment campaign, except for the fact that they were tracking him for all of it. And as investigators dug deeper, the full scope of Daniel's manipulation came into focus. He had spent months terrorizing Crystal, trying to make her believe she was in danger from someone else, this random ex-boyfriend. His attacks were meant to cause fear and make Crystal dependent on him. But when that didn't work, when she continued to pursue her independence, he murdered her. Yeah.
Real nice.
He was arrested in early 2024. He was charged with first-degree murder, 2 counts of stalking, and criminal impersonation. The case drew widespread attention, not only because of the brutal nature of the crime, but because of the disturbing way Krug had tried to orchestrate it. He wasn't just a murderer, he was a puppet master, pulling strings to manipulate the narrative solely to evade suspicion. The trial began in March 2025. Prosecutors laid out the timeline of Krug's stalking and harassment. They presented digital evidence, the burner phone purchases, and the fake email accounts. They showed how Krug had used his knowledge of technology to torment Crystal while maintaining his public persona as a caring husband. But witnesses testified about the couple's troubled marriage. Friends recalled how Crystal had spoken about leaving Krug and how she had become fearful in the months before her death. Family members described the chilling messages that Crystal had received and how deeply they had affected her. The defense tried to argue that there was no direct evidence placing Krug at the scene of the murder, despite the overwhelming circumstantial evidence. Like, he's there. Thankfully, the jury didn't buy it. After weeks of testimony, they returned a guilty verdict on all counts. In April 2025, Daniel Krug was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. The judge classified the murder as an act of domestic violence, noting the extensive psychological abuse that preceded it. The aftermath of Crystal's death meant her children had now lost both of their parents. Her children were placed in the care of her brother and his wife, who have vowed to raise them with love and honesty about what had happened to their mother. Friends and family continue to mourn her loss, remembering her as a brilliant mind, a loving mother, and a woman who deserved so much more than the fate she met. Because her husband was an asshole.
It's a shitty story.
Yeah, I told you it wasn't nice.
Yeah, good.
So. Let's change our palette. Do you have a chaser for us today?
I do. My chaser is actually, it involves the story that I just told. Mm. It's a TV show, and you know I'm very picky about what TV shows are like.
Movies, this you're show, all down for, but TV shows, you're like, I'm not watching
it's
that.
Like, I can invest 2 hours to watch a bad movie and or a movie that I think I would like and then it turns out to be bad, that's fine. But if I invest like 4 days watching a TV show and it just like starts to suck after season two, I'm pissed. But this show, Snowfall, is about how the CIA funded the Contras versus Sandinistas with cocaine, and it involves like a real person named Rick Ross who received all this cocaine and turned it into crack, making the crack.
Yeah. This is the guy that's been on Rogan a bunch of times, right?
Yeah.
Highway Rick Ross.
Millions of dollars from turning cocaine into crack and shipping it throughout California. But the show covers that. It's kind of like Breaking Bad almost, but crack instead of meth. It's really good. It's got like a bunch of, I mean, I don't know a lot of the actors. They look like newer actors to me. Like, I haven't seen them. I shouldn't say they're newer actors, but I haven't seen them in a lot of stuff. And it's a really good show.
Cool.
Yeah, like so it. If you want some more background information on the story I just told, go ahead and watch that. It's a docudrama, but 90% drama, 10% docu. So it's like based on true events, but very loosely.
Cool.
What's your chaser?
My chaser is about a little birdie. A little birdie, little blue jay, has decided to make a nest right in front of our house in the tree that sits just outside a front window of our house. And the first time we saw her was a couple weeks ago, and she like hopped around in the nest and then she took off and we didn't see her for another week. And I thought, oh, she abandoned the nest because there was too much activity or something. She came back a week later and then noticed that she was sitting in that nest a whole lot and she was not getting up, and she would be gone maybe a couple of times a day, but not for very long. And I came to the conclusion that it was a female blue jay and that maybe she was sitting on some eggs. And yesterday we pulled a chair up and looked at the window, and there are at least two eggs in her nest. And I was right. It is a female bird. Your dad was like, there's no way to tell if it's a female bird or a male bird. And I was like, she's sitting in that nest for all day, every day. That has got to be a female bird incubating her eggs. And sure enough, so not only is my chaser that there's a cool blue jay getting ready to have babies right outside of our house and we can watch it, but my chaser is also that I was right. It is a female bird.
That's so funny. Ha-ha. You guys told me about this now. Like, most bird species are able to, you can, like,
tell
the male,
look
very different. But you were saying that blue jays, it's hard to tell, right?
Yeah. According to our Google search, it said that the male and female blue jays look basically identical. It's just the size that's different. And, you know, if there's just one bird, because we've only just seen one bird in that nest and even around that nest. I mean, I suppose it's possible that maybe it's a male bird that's coming and hanging out with his kids. I don't know, but there's only been one bird in that nest. And I'd be curious to see if there's more than two eggs, because we can't see fully in the nest because of how far away it is from the house. But it's still, it's like maybe a foot away from the window. It's just up at an angle that we can't really see into close, it very much. Yeah. And I named her Marge for Marge Simpson because she's got the blue jay mohawk thing going on. And spiky. I was thinking, you know, Marge Simpson. So her name is Marge.
I like the name.
Thank you. Thank you.
You have to name your kids, though. You got, oh, Bart and Lisa. There's two.
Yes.
Bart and Lisa.
I was hoping there were going to be three eggs. So I guess we'll find out if there's three babies. Supposedly, their incubation time is 17 to 18 days. And it's been 2 weeks. So in the next few days, we may have baby blue jays hatched and talking outside.
I wonder if they'll be annoying, just chirping the whole time.
So that was your dad's concern as well. He was saying that, great, now we're going to have to hear these baby birds making noise. Chirp, 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 chirp. But we hear birds all the time.
Hard. Yeah.
So I don't think
through glass. I don't think it'll be a big deal, but
I don't think it'll be a big deal either. But I think so. We had that big snowfall back in February and it broke part of the tree. If that tree hadn't been broken, I don't think she would have built that nest there, because it led to a perfect in and out for her. It would have been completely covered. I don't think that she would have built the nest in that area if the tree hadn't broken. So kind of a bummer about the tree, but it's cool because now we get to see blue jays.
Yeah, you got National Geographic right in your front door.
Right, just gotta look outside. It torments the cat, the fact that bird is out there. She just sits and chirps at the window every time she sees the blue jay moving. She's like, that's my bird.
At least it keeps her busy.
Yeah,
keeps her off your back.
True.
Alrighty. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Hope you enjoyed the episode. Let us know if you're listening for this long. We got mom a new mic set up.
Yes.
So let us know if you notice any discernible audio differences. If it's better, if it's worse, drop a comment, send us a DM if you think it sounds better or whatever. Yeah. It sounds good for everybody else, then I'm going to get one too, but.
You can email us. There's links to our email in the show notes. You can reach us on social media, or if you're listening on Spotify, you can drop a comment directly into the show in the comments on Spotify. So we get notified of all of those things, and we love to hear from our friends. So please say hi to us.
You had a story suggestion you'd like us to cover. Go ahead and let us know.
Yeah.
Drop us a rating on Apple. We'll read it out for you guys.
Yeah, we haven't had one in a while, so come on, guys.
Yeah. It's our spiel. Thanks for listening, everybody. Love you, Mom.
Thanks. Love you, bud.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.